Welcome to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds featuring prominent leaders, subject matter experts, and thought innovators with their perspectives on the current challenges facing K-12 education. I'm your host, Larissa Napolitan, a former teacher, instructional coach, and a member of the Branching Minds team. My hope is to shine a light on phenomenal educators and those that are on a mission to transform our schools and the lives of students. One of the most challenging aspects of leadership is navigating difficult conversations with your team, those that are necessary yet tense, maybe unpleasant, anxiety-inducing conversations. However, handling these kind of moments effectively is a hallmark of a great leader. Today, we're going to hear from authors Tiffany Burns and Erica Baer about their new book, A School Leader's Playbook for Tough Conversations. Tiffany and Erica are friends of the podcast, and they're back to talk about their second book. So welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having us again. We're thrilled to be back.
Thanks, Larissa.
Well, first of all, just to remind the audience, I'm just going to have you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the work that you're currently doing. So Tiffany, I'll start with you.
Yeah. So I've been in education for over 20 years. I've taught elementary, middle, high school, and now university. Erica and I met in the admin program, our administrator licensure program back in 2011. And then we were hired in the same district together as leaders. And so I've been a principal for 12 years. And then a couple years ago, we wrote our first book, Connecting Through Conversation, a playbook for talking with students, and started traveling all over. And that was just so much fun, working with districts, helping support professional development. And then I started coaching principals and administrators and working full-time at a university, working with pre-service teachers, and also working with administrative programs. So I'm having just the absolute best time doing what I'm doing now with my dear friend, Erica Baer.
Yeah. And I'm Erica, and I've also been in education for a little over 20 years. Well, I'm going to say a lot over 20 years, and really started as a special education teacher, which is still very much where my heart lives. And I had the opportunity to work with students grade pre-K through the age of 21, which was awesome. I loved every minute of it, and then transitioned into school administration. I've been an assistant principal, a principal, student services director, assistant superintendent, and now am the superintendent at a sweet district in Southern Oregon, and then also get to do all of this fabulous work around the two books that Tiffany and I have written. So yes, this is a great time to be in education. We're loving it.
Well, I'm so glad to have you back. And immediately when you sent me an email and said, we're coming out a new book, I loved the title because I thought this is the kind of stuff that I love to share with our audience, just tools and resources for them to do the work. And so most of our listeners are school leaders or MTSS leaders or district leaders and that are doing the work to support students. And so often that comes with some tough conversations, and working and leading with leading adults is definitely a challenge. So I love this conversation. So first of all, I want to kind of start and talk about the heart of the book, about why it's so important for school leaders to say it because you care. And can you share just kind of an example of how avoiding tough conversations can send that wrong message to staff or even students?
Yeah. So the whole reason we came into education is because we love kids. And we believe that's true about all of your listeners as well. We get into this because we care about the kids. And yet, as leaders, so much of how we can impact positive outcomes for students is through those conversations and relationships that we build with the adults. So we really have to remember that when we're making that decision, do I step into this difficult conversation or do I avoid it or skirt around it? We really want to check on our motivation, and that is around care. It's because we care about the student. It's because we care about the adult that we're charged to support. We care about the culture in our building, our organization. And so we have to step into that conversation. And what we've learned is that, you know, tough conversations don't get easier with time. They never do. Things always get harder the longer that we wait. And also, something that we really encourage folks to think about is even an imperfect conversation is so much better than not having the conversation at all. And so we identify why we need to have the conversation. It's rooted in that deep care for our students, our community, and our staff. And then we make that brave decision to step into it because we do care.
Something I was thinking about as you were talking, how did you come to this topic as like, we need to write a book about this? How did you decide this is our next book? Because I loved your other book about relating with students. And so I'm just so curious about, was there something that happened in some of the training and some of the things that you did that led to this?
My gosh, Larissa, you read the past. That is exactly what happened. So Eric and I were traveling all over. Well, we still are, you know, doing professional development, working with districts, working with leaders, just really helping folks build those cultures of connection in school, giving them the actual playbook. Here's what to do with these tough conversations with students, and here's what to do to transform behavior and avoid power struggle. All these things that, you know, can really help transform that behavior with students. And inevitably, every single place we went, I think almost every single room we were in, there was a leader or several that would come up to us afterwards and say, "This is fantastic. I can't wait to go back and share all of this with the folks in my building. What do you do for the conversations with grownups? Because those are the ones that I am totally stressing out about. Those are the ones that are keeping me up at night." And we were like, "Oh, we'll write that book." So we did. And it really is, this is how, because, you know, like Erica said, we all got into this for the kids, but our impact really relies on how we communicate with the adults. And if we don't know how to do that well, if we don't know what to say and when to say it and how to say it, that really has a strong negative impact on our culture and in our buildings. And I don't know about you all, well, I know about Erica, but for us, I wasn't taught how to have these conversations. You know, I didn't have school where folks said, "Okay, I want you to say this and try this." So many of the times we just tried it out, got it wrong, called each other up and went, "This didn't work well," or I'm nervous. I have to have this conversation tomorrow. How am I going to say it? Help me kind of role play this out. Let's think about some sentence stems. So I'd really recommend everyone have an Erica, because it's so helpful to have that confidential work bestie. And that's what we wanted this book to be, for you to be able to pick it up and go, "Okay, I'm going to look at the table. I have to have this conversation right now. How am I going to say that?" So really practical sentence stems, sentence frames, you know, planning guides, templates. We wrote it for really busy people so they could just open up to exactly what they needed and go use it right away.
Yeah. Well, I think that something you're naming here is that, and I'm sure that you see this a lot as working at the university level or working with pre-service teachers. I think pre-service teachers and then even leaders who are in training to be administrators, there's part of that training that it was always lacking. And I always felt that in the classroom, we could talk about classroom management, right? Can talk about relating to students, but then I get into the classroom and the hands-on experiences where I like really had to learn and I made a lot of mistakes to get there. And so I feel that same way with leaders. Like there's a lot of times that you may be naturally gifted, encourager and naturally gifted in communication, but there's some of that work that has to happen of like, how do you approach these kind of conversations with adults? Because sometimes administrators who've come from the classroom, they may be used to that with students, but like learning how to work with colleagues, learning how to work with adults that are having a tough time, that maybe you're an assistant principal and you've got a veteran teacher that's twice your age. How do you do that? So I love that you're giving practical tips to leaders.
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. What we do know is that good communication, especially these really tough conversations, it just doesn't happen by accident or because we want it to. It really requires preparation, practice, and intentionality. And so really what we wanted to provide folks was a way to engage in that systematically, because for us, like Tiffany said, we didn't have like a, this is how you have these really tricky conversations when we were going through our preparation program. And they're so critical. You asked earlier, what's the danger in not having the conversation? And what we know is that, you know, what we permit, we promote. And so when we see something in our classrooms or in our culture or in how colleagues are interacting with each other, we know that we need to engage in that conversation. And sometimes if we feel ill-prepared or like we don't have the skills, it's really easy to try and avoid it. And so we really encourage folks to pick this up and think about it as a practice guide, because when the only way to get better at it is to engage in it. And so when we're doing trainings on this work, when we're working with school leaders, when we're doing some of the coaching that we do now, we will actually role play some of these conversations. We will actually say, okay, talk about something big you have coming up. I'm going to be that other person. Let's really think about how the best strategies to engage in this. And even as someone who's been having tough conversations for a long time, I will still write it down. I will still make sure that those key phrases, the key pieces of information that have to be communicated are written out. I had to engage in a difficult conversation recently, and I printed off, Tiffany and I have on our website a template for planning for these difficult conversations. It's a free resource. Anyone can download it. I literally printed it off and filled it out for myself, for this conversation I was going into, as someone who has lots of practice, because that intentional preparation, intentionally thinking it through in advance, is going to lead to such a better outcome, no matter how seasoned you are with these conversations.
Well, and Larissa, you said something that really stood out to me, and it's something that Erica and I talk about quite a bit, and that is, some folks are really, really good at this. They're innately, like, this is something that they're just good at to begin with. And so, like, our communication with students or our communication with adults. And when that happens, we don't always have the skills, or not the skills, but we don't always know what it is that made that work. We don't always think about, this is why that was so successful, or here's this thing that I do. We just naturally do it. So explaining to someone else how to do that in a way to build capacity in your building or in your organization is tricky when you're like, well, can you just watch me? Like, just hang out and watch what I do here and take notes. And what we wanted to do is kind of talk about the science of it and really break it down into a step-by-step practical tool that leaders can have share with other folks in their building, because what we want our leaders to be exceptional at communication, but we don't want them to be the only ones that are really exceptional. Otherwise, they're the ones that are handling all those challenges with caregivers, or they're handling, oh, there's this situation and I need to step in and solve it and step in and make this better. We'd like for them to be able to say, all right, let's sit down together. Here's some strategies. Here's some tools. Here's a step-by-step guide. You can do this, and I'm going to support you with it. And here's what you need to be able to do it well.
Yeah, I feel like that you're right in the fact that if you're naturally good at something, sometimes you just don't think about the science behind it. Like, where does this come from? I always think that people who are literal geniuses don't necessarily understand how hard it is to like work to understand something, right? And so they don't understand that process. I always thought that about like those who are really naturally gifted musicians. But I love that you talked that there is a science behind it, and that you kind of breaking down and giving tools for people who want to understand, how do I get better at this? Because I think that there is that misunderstanding that you either are a leader or you're not. But I think that there's a lot of skills that you can gain to become better at this. And I think that's with teachers, with anyone. And so I love that you've provided this tool. I want to talk a little bit about some of the practical things. You kind of mentioned this. Trust is kind of a reoccurring theme in your book, and you dedicate a whole chapter to it, in fact. So what are some practical ways, this is kind of getting into some of those practical strategies, what are some of the practical ways that you feel like school leaders can start to build trust with their teams, especially if they're new to a district? Because I imagine these tough conversations are even harder when you don't have a lot of established relationships with people.
Trust is a critical component to being able to provide feedback in a way that can be received. If we're trying to tell someone how to improve in the classroom and you're not coming from a baseline of trust, it's not something that they're going to listen to. And so we think about a couple of different ways to build that trust. One is we have to really think about how can we be as transparent as possible with our intent. So when we're making a decision, when we're engaging in a conversation, even when we're bringing something to someone's attention, we want to be really transparent with the why behind that. Having this conversation because I care about this. I've noticed this outcome and it's something that I'm really passionate about and I want to support you with. But if we don't, if we're not transparent with our own intent, then intent will be ascribed to us and that may or may not actually match what we did intend. So being transparent with intent is important. It's also important to do what you say you're going to do and follow through. Be consistent. Make sure that you are intentionally building relationships with everyone in your building, everyone you support. And so thinking about some of those routines, some of those things that you can put into your daily cycle to make sure that you are making connections and building relationships with individuals so that you are coming from a place of genuine care is an important component to trust. Tiffany, I'm sure you have more to add to that.
I love that you talked about just being really transparent with intent because, Larissa, like you were talking about when you said it's harder for new leaders, you are 100% correct in that. So if folks don't know you, they don't know why you're making the decisions you're making, they are going to, just like Erica said, ascribe motivation to you. They're going to come up with a story of like, well, he made that decision because of this, or she made that decision because of this reason. And there really is a simple way to deal with that. And that is to tell people really clearly and intentionally and explicitly why you're making the decisions that you're making. Be as transparent as possible whenever you can to share that. Here's why I'm thinking this. It's interesting. People often will think that your decisions are made based on money and budget. And so much of the time that is not, I mean, that's a part, but our bigger decision, like for example, let's say that someone is saying, you know, the student really needs a one-on-one aid with them all the time. And we're saying, you know, I just really don't think that's in the best interest of the student. And we just say, you know, no, we're not able to do that. They're thinking, oh, you don't want to pay for that. And really what we know is that we don't want our student to just be with one person all the time. We don't want to develop this learned helplessness. We want to look for areas when they don't need to have this over scaffolding. And if we can just explain that and be able to say really clearly, here's what we're looking for. And we actually have the same interest. We want this child to be successful. And so let's talk about the common interest that we have as opposed to what we think solutions to that can be. It moves you into this place of collaboration, of understanding. And it really, you know, just like you originally asked, it really helps build and foster trust. Because in the absence of information, we're going to make up a story. We are absolutely going to make up a story. And what we want to do is say, well, here's the actual story.
Well, and oftentimes that story is going to have a slightly negative tint to it, especially if they don't know you, right? I feel like that in the absence of relationship, we fill in the gap with a negative. That's just the way our brains work, like often negative intent. And so I think that that's that place where that transparent communication is really helpful to understand the intent and to fill in the gaps for other people to know you a little bit better. Okay, this is how they make decisions. And over time, can people begin to form better assumptions of what your choices are.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, kind of speaking into some of the science of this, you mentioned in the book that body language is something we don't often necessarily think about, but it's important. Can you kind of explain a little bit about how a leader's body position and body language can either strengthen or undermine their message?
Absolutely. But we send the overwhelming majority of messages with our bodies, right? So 55% of what we're communicating is nonverbal. And then we have 38% is through tone and volume. And it's only 7% that are our words. So our words are very, very important, but we absolutely have to think about the messages that we're sending with our bodies. And so, you know, when we're talking about with students, we're talking about we don't want to tower over students. We want to be on their same level. And then we think about, you know, with adults, and with students, actually, we oftentimes will put ourselves in this like kind of face to face, like straight across from each other, like we're sitting right across from each other at a table where our shoulders are squared off and we're face to face. In the animal kingdom, that is really confrontational. That when we stand squared off, that's actually really, it's like we're ready to brawl. Like it's letting them know that we're ready for this confrontation. And I think about this, and Eric and I talk about this a lot when we go in for meetings. And how many times in a meeting do we have staff on one side and family and caregivers on the other side? And we're literally set up, you know, physically for an us versus them type of environment. And so we just want to think about where we're positioning ourselves. If I'm having a really tough conversation, or I know that I'm going to be having a tough conversation, I want to see what I can do to sit next to the person. Or if we've got if we can't have a circle table, which I love, we can't all replace all of our furniture with circle tables instead of rectangles. What we want to do is make sure that there are folks that are sitting next to the family and the caregiver, so they're not in this across from each other kind of way. And we also want to think about power objects. If I'm sitting behind, if I'm a school leader and I'm sitting behind my desk and I have a caregiver come in to have a conversation with me, if I'm sitting behind my desk and we have this huge desk between us, I just set up that I'm in charge and this is the hierarchy of this situation. Even in a small office, and I work with one in particular who has a very tiny office, she has it set up to where she's got two chairs, you know, right in front so she can sit next to them and not sit with a big power object in between.
Yeah. And I think it's important when we're thinking about talking to teachers or whoever we're supporting as building leaders, the same concepts apply. So I like to sit at like a 90 degree because sometimes it's kind of weird at a conference table to sit right next to someone if there aren't other people in the room. So that 90 degree can be really helpful because what that allows you to utilize is the third point, which is just a neutral object that you can put in front of you. So if we're talking about a classroom observation, I'm going to have the data from that observation in between us. And that allows us to direct our eyes there, which can really help support the fact that when we're under stress, eye contact is more difficult. That's true for all humans. So it just gives us a neutral place to look. And it also takes the energy that might be difficult from between the two people to the piece of data. And it just lowers the tension in the room. And same thing, when I have a staff member who I support come in, I'm going to walk around to the other side of my desk. I'm not going to stay on the other side. And if it's a lower stakes conversation, but there's a connection piece or something difficult that we're talking through, I still love to take a walk. A walking meeting can be huge.
I was just going to say, I always find that tough conversations are easier when you're not looking at, you can look at something else.
A walking
conversation, I think, is great. You know, I love that you talked about just having a third object or something, a third point. And these are all things that I think, you know, maybe some people understand or like it just happens naturally, but I think being very intentional about and really thinking through, how do I want this conversation to go? How do I want the person to walk away feeling. I love that you said that only 7% of this really is about your words and it's about that experience, that physical experience that someone has. So interesting. And I even think that this relates to even if you're having to address, like if you're in a whole meeting with your staff too, I think about your body language as a leader says a lot about how you want to communicate things. So very, very interesting.
Well, and it's just stuff. Some of it is stuff that is, it's just like, oh, that's such an easy fix. You know, like, so you can't see, but I'm a tall person and I have really long arms. So it's very comfortable for me to stand and sit with my arms crossed. And what we know is that convey, like for me, I'm just comfortable. But what it conveys to other people is that I'm closed off and I'm not really open to having conversation. And so when we share that, folks are like, oh, okay, that is an easy fix. And that is something that I can do to be more approachable or to have folks feel more comfortable around me.
Well, one of my favorite parts that you kind of talk about in this book is about listening for reflection and connection. One of my absolute favorite quotes is oftentimes we listen to respond, not to understand. I remember putting that up in my classroom, my 8th grade classroom, and students were all like, huh, like have them to think about that. Do I just listen to have something to say? But in the same thing, how do you feel like that leaders can train themselves to listen better, especially when emotions are running high?
Yeah, I think there's a number of things you can do. The first, especially when emotions are running high, I think the first is in a high stakes conversation like that, we have to stay in the mind frame of curiosity. And so really thinking about, okay, there is more to this story. What is actually going on for this person? What is the angst under the anger? So we're going to lead with some questioning, right? We're going to lead with kind of trying to get the story and asking some open-ended questions as opposed to getting defensive or responding to whatever it is they're saying. And so we do talk about some really easy strategies to demonstrate that listening, right? We think about looping. So kind of asking a question, reflecting back what we think we heard them say, making sure that we got that right, and then kind of repeating that cycle until we really have a good understanding of what's going on for the person. When someone is escalated, a huge component is just helping them understand that we heard what you had to say. And once they know we've heard it, they're likely to be able to stop saying it over and over again. I don't know if anyone's had that experience, but we want to make sure that we are saying things like, oh my gosh, I hear that. I understand what you're saying. I've made a note of that. I'm going to go ahead and jot that down. Thinking about letting them know that we're taking it really seriously. Like, I'm so sorry this happened. We're really taking it seriously and we're going to dig into it and figure out what's going on. So a lot of it is about reflecting back, and a lot of it is about just conveying that we do care about what happened, even if they might be coming in with a perspective that feels maybe different than our own or might feel blown out of proportion. There's likely a lot more going on. And really thinking about asking more questions than doing any talking. And one of the things that we think about for both kids and adults is when we're stressed. And so in those interactions, if someone has come in hot, then we know that they're stressed. And so are we. So we need to make sure that we're maintaining our own composure. But at the same time, we know that when someone is stressed, any noise at all activates the amygdala and causes them to become even more escalated. So this is why, like when we're driving, we have to turn the radio down so we can see better when we get lost. It's the same idea. And so we want to be careful that we are not putting additional noise into the space, that we're using as few words as possible, and that we're really asking questions and then reflecting back what we're understanding them to have said until we're sure that we really have a good understanding about what is at the root of the issue.
Well, and I think too, I really appreciate you asking this question, Larissa, because it's so tricky, right? When people are really, really heightened, that's so hard. And, you know, Erica and I have in the book dozens of sentence stems, those like what exactly to say in the moment. And so those are really helpful to have folks look at. But another piece is just thinking about, as I'm listening, try to listen with some purpose. Like when someone's talking and they are heated, I'm going to be listening and maybe taking some notes on what they're saying, but I'm also listening for common agreements. Like I'm listening for common ground. Oftentimes we really do want the same thing. We just have different ideas on how to get there. And so when someone is quite escalated and we have agreed on things, they haven't clocked that. They're not like, oh my gosh, we agree on so much. This is excellent, right? They're just thinking about how we're not on the same page. And so we want to draw their attention to things that we do agree on. And so we can say things, and these are some of those sentence stems, you know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing that we both really want the same thing. We both really want your child to be successful. Or we both really want the students in this class to be well managed. We absolutely want student behaviors to decrease and academic results to increase. We can listen for those things, reflect back to them. Here are the areas that we agree. And then we're going to use words like us, we, together, those kind of things to signal that we're on the same page. And this is what we're doing moving forward. And what that's doing is that's helping people see, okay, we don't have to fight. This isn't a battle. We do want the same things. We just have different ideas on how to get there. And saying things like, you know, I really appreciate you partnering with me on this.
Yeah.
It's just so helpful because everybody pretty much always wants the same thing in education. We just don't point it out.
Well, and sometimes we have different methods to get there.
Right.
But it is going, hey, we want to go in the same direction. I think I love that you identify the finding that common ground is so important and helping them feel understood. because I do think that I know I'm the kind of person, if I go into a situation, I think they have no idea about my experience. They don't understand what I'm coming from. And so helping them feel understood of like, okay, these are the things I hear you saying. Is that correct? Those kind of, that kind of information. And then going, hey, I hear we want to do this. We want the same thing. Let's talk about why it's different. I think that those kind of things help de-escalate or help that person feel safer. And I love that you talked about how we're on the same team. We're headed to the same goal. That's actually really good life advice too. like this is relatable to other things, not just.
Yeah. 100%. Yes.
This is great conflict resolution.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that in some of these kind of heated situations, even I've heard the term of being as a leader is sort of being the non-anxious presence, because if someone comes in and they're heightened, your ability to be calm. And I think we talked about this, I think the last time we talked about your other book, we mirror the emotions of another person. And so being able to be that non-anxious presence for someone else who has a heightened sense of emotion, you know, emotions is, I think, is really important as well.
We talk about the concept that emotions are contagious, and we want the emotions people catch from us to be the right emotion. And so we really want folks to catch our calm is what we really think about for both kids and adults. And just being aware that if someone comes in really escalated, we're at risk of catching that. And if we go to an escalated place, that is going to escalate them further, because our emotions are also contagious. So it's like this escalation of anxiety, frustration, anger, whatever it is. And so being really intentional about not matching those emotions and just kind of grounding ourselves as much as we can, taking those deep breaths, taking a glass of water, really lowering our speed and our volume so that how we're talking is also going to induce some calm. When someone else is talking high and fast, we want to go low and slow, and it really just brings the temperature down and at the very least is less likely to escalate the situation further.
Well, that was going to be my next question is, when you have a sudden situation, how do you stay composed? I feel like you already answered that. Tiffany, did you have something else you wanted to add?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Exactly what Erica was saying. And then Erica said, you know, get a glass of water. I don't go anywhere without my water bottle. I like to stay hydrated, but it is also a prop. And it is so helpful to just take that moment. Sometimes all we have are 15 seconds, even that might be a little luxurious at times, but just taking a moment, taking a sip of water, that can really help me get just centered right there. And it might just be all that I need to be able to move forward. And it's, you know, it's super easy when we're folks that are really connected and when we're empathetic helpers, which all educators are, it's so easy for us to match the energy of others. And so we really want to think about when they go louder and faster, we're going to go lower and slower. And we're really just going to slow ourselves down. If we do catch that energy, we're not going to beat ourselves up. We're just going to think, look how great I am at connecting. I'm so connected here, you know, and then take those moments to intentionally unmatch. And we have so many, again, I keep talking about these sentence stems because it feels like they just keep fitting into this conversation. But when folks come in really upset about something, and it doesn't matter if it's true, it's not true, that is their experience and they are really upset, saying something like, gosh, I'm so sorry that happened. I'm not taking responsibility for that, because it maybe is something that we, you know, we don't want to admit responsibility for because it's not exactly what happened. But being able to say to them, I'm so sorry that happened, it really helps them, again, feel heard. The other one that I really use, sometimes people come in with a story that did not happen. It's just they were told something and it is not what actually occurred. Well, we aren't going to say to them, your kid lied to you, or that is not how the conversation went. That's not going to help build connection. What we want to say is, oh my gosh, I would be really upset too if that's what I was told happened. If that's what I thought happened, I would be so upset. So we're validating their experience, and then we're opening the door to be able to say, can I share with you what did happen? Yeah. And then it just really takes the heat out. of the situation.
Well, and then it prevents then the battle of what's true and what's not true, right? Then you can kind of come back and go, okay, let's review the facts in a calm, because you can't, don't say let's review the facts when they're really angry, because that's not gonna help.
No, I'm gonna escalate them further.
Yeah. Also, absolutely. Don't recommend telling them to calm down. Also, not it.
I feel like that goes without saying, but let's say it again. Don't tell a frustrated, upset person to calm down. That's done.
Did it once, and I will just own this. This is hysterical. This really happened. I was on the phone with this parent. I was a middle school assistant principal. She was going off on me, and I was trying to get her to calm. And I said, you know, I think maybe it's time to wrap up this conversation and we can talk later when we're both calm. And she screamed, I am calm, which was, I mean, it's funny now. It was not funny in the moment.
Middle school assistant principal. I have to say, I was telling somebody the other day that role, a middle school assistant principal, it's probably one of the toughest admin roles there is in education. I have to say it, and I'm validate anybody who's ever been a middle school AP. And I was in a middle school for 13 years. Like I know. The fact that you made it out on the other side. Good job. Well, there's so much else that we could talk about in this. And I appreciate you guys being here. One question I really kind of want to get to, because I do feel like so many leaders, this is what they're dealing with, is that how do you coach negative staff? How do you coach those people that almost come and are like, I don't want to be coached. I just want to get here. I just want to show up and get my paycheck. There's always some staff member that's like that. I hope there's not, but there is some of that negativity that you're always going to encounter. What would you say are some good tactics for leaders in that kind of situation to address some of those negative, those people that are kind of dragging some of that culture down?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought this up, Larissa, because I do think this is one that's easy to ignore. You know, because
it's not fun to talk about.
It is not fun to talk about, and it's sort of awkward. It's a little bit awkward to think about. It's like you're naming a tone or you're naming a behavior that we're seeing. And so that part's tricky, and we don't have a lot of modeling on how to do it well, and it causes us to have a lot of discomfort. So there's a whole chapter in our book about how exactly to do that, and it starts the same as all of our other conversations. We're thinking about coaching up. We're thinking about not just the behavior, but the outcome. You know, I had this many different staff come to me after the staff meeting and say this comment that you made about students really impacted them and it was upsetting to them for these reasons. Or, you know, you're using evidence. So you want to be really concrete with your facts in the same way you are with other things that you want to change. You're using real examples. You're not using adjectives. You're not saying words like always or never. You're saying, you know, in this instance, you mentioned this in the staff room. This is what you said. And here was the impact on others. In an email, you know, you had said this. And then we like to really rely on that rubric. It doesn't matter what rubric you have for teachers and evaluation. There is something in there about your professional dispositions. And we can use that the way that we collaborate and connect with staff. We can use that as a way to help shift behavior. All of us have had staff that have gone through kind of pockets of negative, like where they're hit something and they're having a harder time and it's not typically their behavior. And so we want to, again, point that out. We want to think about feedback being a gift and saying, hey, I'm sure this isn't your intention and you're usually so collaborative. And lately I've been noticing this. What's going on? What's up?
Oh, I think you're spot on that, because I think that I've had situations where it's like, it's just a tough year, or if it's just a tough season of your life personally. And sometimes it just comes out in the work that we do. And I think that's.
It's that being really curious, genuine, and really going in, going, there's something going on. What's up? And, you know, talk to me about it. Again, you've had to have built that relationship to begin with. So then it's really genuine. I have done that numerous, numerous times with staff, and it shifts behavior right away. And they're able to say, like, actually almost all of them have said, thank you for pointing that out. I really appreciate it. I wasn't noticing what that impact was.
Yeah, I just feel like that. And number one, and also it helps you feel cared for in a way and seen. Because I've, in that situation, my principal came in and was like, hey, this doesn't seem normal for you. What's going on? And it provided me an opportunity to share, these are my concerns of the year. These are all the things on my plate. I'm feeling overwhelmed, or I don't think you see this. It provided me that avenue in a way that felt, not understanding maybe like how my negativity was coming out or whatever, but just was like, oh yeah, this is why. So I think that that can build, helped also build a stronger relationships with your staff. Okay. Again, there's so much more we could talk about. And I so appreciate you both being here to chat about this. I'm so excited to share this book with our audience. And I'll share links in our show notes to some of the resources you mentioned, your website, how to buy the book. And just thank you so much.
Thank you. This was a real pleasure. Good to see you.
Thanks, Larissa. It's always so fun to chat with you. You're such a great host. I love chatting with you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for listening to Schoolin' Around, a podcast hosted by Branching Minds. Go ahead and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget, if you are enjoying our content, would you do us a favor and rate and review our podcast on iTunes? This helps others find our podcasts and lets us know how much you love what we're creating. Branching Minds is an educational technology company using learning sciences and technology to help districts effectively personalize learning through MTSS. To learn more about us, check out our website, branchingminds.com, or follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn at Branching Minds.